Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, helping to make Easter dinner easy with ready-to-heat and serve citrus-glazed ham, au gratin potatoes, deviled eggs, and pastry trays. Make it easy with Harmon's.
The Trump administration is in the process of overhauling the immigration detention apparatus in this country. This is the system for holding, processing, and ultimately deporting people. And at the center of that effort is a plan from U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to deport as many as 1 million people a year. Now, at that scale, detention space becomes a critical part of the operation. So ICE is changing how it handles that. The agency is moving away from a patchwork of locally run jails and privately contracted facilities to something more centralized, something owned by the government itself. The plan is called the Detention Reengineering Initiative, and it calls for 8 huge detention centers and up to 16 regional processing sites. It means more than 92,000 detention beds nationwide. And to pull this off, ICE has been buying these big industrial buildings, warehouses basically, and converting them from places designed to store goods into places designed to hold people. And as you probably know by now, one of those buildings is here in Utah. Earlier this year, the federal government paid about $145 million for a warehouse on the industrial west side of Salt Lake City. Now, they didn't tell anyone they were buying it, not the governor, not the congressional delegation, not the mayor. It was secretive. And as the Salt Lake Tribune reporter Jose Davila IV told us, it was really, really complicated. Davila learned about the sale on a Thursday, and the very next day, he and his colleagues tried to find the seller.
On Friday, our question was, well, who sold it? How do we actually figure out who stands to benefit from this thing? You know, sometimes it'll be a company that has one owner. Great, let me call the owner. But that wasn't the case.
So you didn't find a single owner. What you found was this alphabet soup name.
Correct. REEFCPIF 6020W300SLLC. Immediately, the first thing I think about is that, okay, this company is held by another company. Another alphabet soup. REEF Core Plus Industrial REIT LLC. That business was not listed in Utah. It was listed in Delaware. You don't have to name people who work for the company nor people who own the company. REEF Real Estate Investment Company. The DWS, a German asset management firm. Make money from renting that real estate or selling that real estate. Really rich people, institutional investors. We don't know their names. This isn't listed on some stock exchange somewhere. The people who invest in it are protected. But they're the ones who probably stand to benefit the most.
Do you think, Jose, it matters that it's not just one owner or one group of owners, but that it's a more complicated ownership investment group? Does that matter to the larger story?
I think it's interesting for a couple reasons. One, it's probably unlikely that this was some ideological sale, right? This is not some warehouse owner who's a real big MAGA guy that wants to support the administration's mass deportation agenda. I think the other thing is that people who are opposed to this mass deportation agenda, this idea that I should be expanding and should be detaining more people, they want to know who made this decision, who they can blame, who they can protest. And in this case, it seems pretty unlikely that we'll ever know.
Okay, let's sum this up. Isn't it interesting how Byzantine this thing is? I mean, we haven't even talked about the story itself yet. We're just talking about the buying of the property itself. What do you make of that? It's just the first step of a really – it's such an interesting, complicated process, that first step.
It is very interesting. It's very complicated. It is not how we think of business being done, right? It's not even a usual – even like federal contract, really. I think it speaks to the desperation of the administration to meet its mass deportation goals and its willingness to just go as fast as it can, to acquire as much property as it can, to build these things out as fast as it can. I think it also speaks to our complex financial system, right? Like, there are a lot of rich people in this country that have a lot of ways to make themselves more rich. Also, a lot of regular people who are invested in pensions. And given this economy we've built for ourselves, sometimes you get in these weird situations and these weird corporations and these weird Russian nesting dolls because some confluence of all these interests fall here in Salt Lake City and fall on the backs of many more undocumented immigrants that could be detained if all of this goes to ISIS plan.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So today in the program, we're going to talk about this Salt Lake City warehouse and how it fits into this much larger national strategy as ICE is working to reshape immigration enforcement across the country. And let's go back to Jose Davila IV of the Salt Lake Tribune, who told us, while the deal to buy the warehouse is this convoluted mystery, the actual building itself, it's pretty ordinary.
The warehouse is, as the company's name suggests, at 6020 West 300 South. This is a warehouse district.
Yep.
It is surrounded by very similar looking facilities, some of which are, in fact, manufacturing facilities. It's, it's almost just around the corner from the Stadler railcar factory, but is also across the street and surrounded by other distribution warehouses. Like Costco is a big distribution warehouse basically just across the street.
And it's remote, at least relative to the city, right?
Correct. It is, you know, there's not very many other shops or residential areas nearby. The facility itself is about 830,000 square feet.
Yeah, put that in perspective because the size is interesting. It sounds big. Is that big relative to, you know, industrial facilities?
It sure looks big.
right.
There are certainly other warehouses in this district that are over 1 million square feet.
Wow.
In fact, the rumored warehouse that we thought might get sold to ICE earlier on was over 1 million square feet. There are possibly other smaller warehouses, but I would say it's
right
probably about average.
Yeah.
It looks like it fits in.
Yeah. And here's a critical question. Was it built to hold human beings?
No.
You know, does it have bathrooms and showers and a kitchen and a cafeteria? Does it have enough exits? Does it have enough entrances if there were a fire? All of those things.
No. So it was not built for that. It was built to hold goods, not people. And therefore, you know, some amount of people working to deliver those goods, but not hundreds or even thousands of people living there or being held there. So it will need upgrades all across the board. It will need fire suppression system upgrades. It will need water upgrades. It will need, obviously, to be retrofitted to hold people. It will need cell-like spaces. It will need offices for the guards. It will need all of those things. There will also need to be upgrades outside of the warehouse. The city will
Big, tall fences, security facilities.
Yes, stuff on the property will have to happen as well. But I'm also – the Salt Lake City is also worried that the sewer system in this neighborhood cannot hold 1,000 more people, let's say.
Yeah.
Even more than that. The city's scared that this could hold 7,500 people.
Right.
And so the mayor just last week said that a warehouse was using about 5,600 gallons of water per day. It will need 1 million gallons of water, basically.
And it just doesn't have the infrastructure to handle that.
Exactly. Like the sewer in the middle of 300 South, the sewer pipeline, can't hold that.
Yeah.
And then there would be downstream effects as well for lift stations and stuff further towards the city.
So you write about this internal agency memo that offers some clues about this center and about the larger strategy here. The memo suggests the warehouse could become a key part of this new national network of detention centers. So what do we understand about this larger strategy? Because I want to get a sense of where Utah fits in this bigger plan.
Maybe it's best to start where Utah fits now. So right now there are no long-term term ICE-specific detention facilities in Utah. What often happens for somebody who is picked up by ICE here is that they may go for a day or a couple of hours to the ICE field office in West Valley City, where there are a handful of cells to hold people. Then ICE might move them to a county jail. A lot of the time, that's actually in Wyoming at the Uinta County Jail in Evanston, just across the border. And then from there, detainees, especially, and depending on their cases, will go to Pahrump, Nevada. They'll go to Aurora, Colorado. They'll go to Otay Mesa in San Diego. They'll go to one of these other bigger, long-time and long-term ICE detention facilities. ICE, embarking on this program of building and wanting to detain and deport more people from the United States, has identified Utah as a place where a detention facility like this could be really helpful to them, to their agenda, because it would be kind of centrally located, it would be close to an airport, and could take detainees from other northern Mountain West states, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, which also don't have these big detention facilities.
So the larger strategy, if I understand it, includes, you know, buying and renovating the 8 of these big facilities and then up to 16 smaller facilities. Is the Utah one a big one or a small one?
That is a question we don't really know an answer to. Huh. That is a question we don't really have an answer to, because ICE won't tell us. We ask, hey, how big, how many people do you think you're going to hold here? We have not gotten an answer on that.
So what you got was a general statement.
Exactly. And have done for this whole last couple weeks in reporting and doing follow-up reporting on this. It's generally some sort of statement that is more or less the same as the statement we got before.
So, you were asking, how many detainees are going to be held there? When is it open? And when you talk about how many detainees will be there, one of the things you've done in your reporting is you've pointed to these similar ICE warehouses in other states. Maryland is one, for example, that had a similar size. That held about 1,500 people. There was another one in Phoenix, expected to hold between 1,000 and 1,500, I think, is your reporting. So based on that, is your hunch that right around 1,500 would be held in this? I mean, I guess since ICE won't tell you, you just have to guess.
Yes, we have to guess. I think that is the best thing we can do right now is compare to other similar facilities. Listeners may have heard of Social Circle Georgia, which is kind of a rural town outside of Atlanta, where ICE has bought an existing empty warehouse, but then has proposed building 2 other buildings on the same property that would take the total square footage of that property to 2.3 million square feet. They think they can hold 7,500 to 10,000 detainees there, making it one of those 8 bigger, longer-term detention centers where detainees could be held for weeks and months.
Yeah. So you don't know where Utah fits in the picture.
We don't know. And you know, city officials seem to think that that ICE plans to hold 7,500 people here. Now, they keep saying they haven't talked to ICE. So they're operating with
their own speculation.
Yeah. Information we are.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about how ICE went about this, which is interesting. I mean, they didn't let the governor know they were buying the warehouse. They didn't tell any members of the congressional delegation. I mean, even close members, you'd think they'd tell Mike Lee or any of the other sort of members of the you know, Republican congressional delegation. They didn't tell anyone. And they didn't tell anyone locally. It seemed like a secret. And the governor has said he was really frustrated by all of this. He says he supports the idea, but it sounds like what he was saying was this isn't the way to do it.
Yes, I think that's exactly what the governor is saying. I think that's, you know, Senator Curtis put out a statement as well that focused on this, that took ICE to task to say, you know, this isn't the right approach. There should be collaboration. There should be local input on a facility like this.
Remarkably bold for a Republican senator who has said he supports the president, but as you say, he was really critical of the process.
He was certainly critical of the way ICE went about this.
Jose Davila IV, he's the West Side Communities reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. We'll take a quick break and come back in a moment You're listening to Radio West.
Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, helping to make Easter dinner easy with ready-to-heat and serve citrus-glazed ham, au gratin potatoes, deviled eggs, and pastry trays. Make it easy with Harmon's.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The federal government is preparing a major expansion of immigration enforcement. The idea is to dramatically increase the number of people it can detain and deport each year. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, has a goal of deporting as many as 1 million people every year. And when you're talking about that kind of volume, you need somewhere to hold them as they move through the system. The agency's answer is these massive detention centers throughout the country, these warehouses. And Utah is part of that plan. ICE recently purchased a warehouse on Salt Lake City's west side. And today in the program, we're talking about it and about the larger strategy. When the warehouse purchase was revealed, it was like a mystery. We don't know who sold it, and at first we didn't know exactly what ICE had in mind for it, like when it would go online and how many detainees it would hold. But this week, we got a little more clarity. Salt Lake City Mayor Erin Mendenhall said she spoke with an ICE official who told her the Salt Lake City warehouse facility was going to be one of the so-called mega centers in the government's plan, and they believed it would hold between 7,500 and 10,000 people. The mayor mentioned the information didn't change her position on the facility. She's still opposed to it, still hoping city attorneys can find a legal way to stop it. Let's go back now to our conversation with the reporter Jose Davila IV of the Salt Lake Tribune. So ICE has said that people should be on board with this facility because it's going to be an economic boon for the state. One of the things they've suggested is that it's going to bring almost 10,000 jobs to the area. It's going to create something like $1 billion or more than $1 billion to the GDP, generate more than $230 million in tax revenue. Like, why wouldn't you be all on board about this? So what do you know about those claims? Because the Trib did an analysis about those numbers. So what do you know about that economic boon that they're calling it?
What we know, first of all, is that we don't know how they came to those numbers. They would not tell us, you know, how they analyzed that, how they came to those numbers. So yes, we tried to do our own analysis. I think what we found was that they were relatively overstated, those claims. And there's obviously some initial question marks, right? 10,000 jobs is probably not – there's 10,000 ICE agents working at this facility all the time. Likely those some of those 10,000 jobs are construction-related jobs, right? They have to retrofit the warehouse, as we were just talking about.
So maybe that's where that's coming from.
Yeah. So there's, you know, XYZ construction company is going to help us build the warehouse. You know, 20 of their employees are going to be dedicated to that project, right? Then maybe you have the food service. And we know ICE signed a transportation agreement with a Florida company to transport detainees around Utah. Those are obviously now Utah jobs, the people that have to drive those vans, right? So there's all of that. The tax stuff is really interesting because the facility itself won't generate any taxes. It's not taxable. It's a government property.
Well, then where are they coming up with $238.7 million in tax revenue?
That number is likely from what they spend on construction materials. So if they buy construction materials, those construction materials are, I suppose, privy to Utah sales taxes. That's my best guess. There's also income taxes on those jobs that you could be counting. So, they're taking in a lot of data and they're saying all of this is related to this facility. Therefore, we think this facility will be worth this much in economic benefits.
So you got the governor who's saying, look, I'm all for it. I wish it had been done differently, but we need a facility like this in the West. This makes sense for us. And most other leaders, congressional delegation leaders, have said similar things, like they're all for this. But let's talk about Salt Lake City Mayor Erin Mendenhall, who's not at all for this. She called the mass detention of people in a warehouse inhumane, wrote this letter to ICE where she raised this whole list of concerns, and I wanted to ask you about them. She mentioned, as you were sort of referring to earlier, she mentioned this strain on sewer, this possible strain on road systems. She even mentioned a possible loss of tax revenue. So what does it reveal about the challenges of, you know, converting a warehouse built for goods into a detention facility? And what are you hearing from the mayor about all of that?
I think the mayor's fear is that ICE does not make that many upgrades, does not really upgrade the facilities inside the warehouse, does not provide good food service, does not build actual beds. There are fears that if ICE doesn't make the necessary upgrades, that this becomes a really dangerous place. It becomes a uncomfortable place. You know, detainees have long been concerned and criticized the food, the sleeping conditions, treatment by ICE agents and or private prison contractors. Many of these are private prisons operated by private prisons. So if these internal upgrades don't work, or some of these external upgrades that ICE needs to work with the city on water, on sewer, even perhaps public safety, fire response, EMS response, that could create really dire conditions for the people that are staying here. It actually, in some ways, is a balancing act for the city, right? And then, you know, last week they passed a new ordinance saying that, you know, new facilities like this, new industrial facilities, can't use, you know, more than 200,000 gallons of water in a day. Well, what if that means that these detainees can't shower for days or are limited in how much water they can drink? Then obviously, then in some ways, the city has a part to play in that too. And she's really worried about that.
Yeah. And I think it gets to that this larger legal option that the mayor seems to be looking for, because she's directed city attorneys to look for possible legal action. What do we know about the options the city actually has? How far is the mayor willing to go or be able to, you know, how much legal right does she have to stop all of this? What do we know about that so far?
So she has pledged to use every tool at her disposal. She is looking for all of those tools. Generally speaking, the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution says the federal government can more or less do what it wishes. The federal government generally isn't constrained by zoning regulations, for example.
So you're saying her lawyers have their work cut out for them?
Yes, certainly. And so I think one of the things that we have seen movement on across the country and now here in Salt Lake City is trying to figure out public service delivery, this delivery of water, this delivery of sewer services, and whether or not the city can constrain those services, can limit those services so that such a facility like this cannot function.
I want to ask you about what seems to be this concern by observers that the warehouse is kind of a precursor. It's a sign that a more intense effort at immigration-related arrests are coming. Like once they get this thing online, then there's going to be a wave of the same kinds of things that you're seeing in other communities in the country. Is that right?
Yeah, there is a lot of concern about that. I think people are scared. People are terrified. I talked to Isaac Atencio, who's the co-owner of Culture Coffee on the West Side and the Salt Lake Barber Company. He said, yeah, it's scary. And he mentioned that it's a bummer for the West Side, which is, you know, this is where the facility is going to be.
Yeah.
The West Side is more diverse, more Latino than the rest of the Salt Lake Valley, almost more than the entire state. And so there was some real fear and concern about that. The policy part of this is that according to that memo we were talking about earlier, ICE wants to have these facilities built out by the time that its hiring push bears fruit. So last year, ICE made a big push to hire more ICE agents so that it could detain and deport more people.
Because they have a quota.
They have a national quota.
That Kristi Noem wasn't able to hit.
So they want to hit that quota. They want to carry out mass deportations. And So by the time training and onboarding for these basically 12,000 ICE agents comes online, they want nationwide to then be able to use those agents to arrest more people and put them in detention facilities.
It seems like one of the questions is whether or not you look at that facility as just a regional place, a regional gathering place for, you know, detainees from the Western, Intermountain Western region, or whether or not they have in mind, the federal government, the Trump administration, a crackdown of Salt Lake City itself or the larger cities in Utah. Is there any way of knowing, I guess maybe not, but any way of knowing whether people should be bracing for the same kinds of crackdowns, bracing here, that have come to other cities in the U.S.?
I talked to a local immigration lawyer. Her name is Kendall Moriarty, about this, and she laid out those distinct possibilities. Okay, is it something where they're using this warehouse for detainees from across the Intermountain West, or are they using it for people, you know, in the Salt Lake City metro area?
Yeah.
And her guess was it would probably be both, or a combination, right? It's well suited, perhaps, to carry out both of those tasks. There are undocumented immigrants living in communities all across this country. And so it seems likely that this could be a catch-all for those people across the Intermountain West. I don't think that rules out one or the other.
Yeah.
The likelihood that there is more enforcement, I think observers think that's the case. Does that mean this Utah becomes the next Minnesota?
Right.
Who knows?
Jose, thanks very much.
Thank you, Doug.
Jose Davila IV, he's the Westside Communities reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for Radio West comes from listeners like you. Become a member at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. ICE, that is U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has a plan to remake the immigration detention system in the United States. And today in the program, we're talking about how Utah fits into the plan, because part of the strategy is a warehouse on the industrial west side of Salt Lake City. It's a massive building, more than 800,000 square feet, near the airport and I-80. And the federal government bought it for $145 million, and it's way more than it's actually worth. But the sale part is completed. And anyway, the building is part of something much bigger, a multi-billion dollar effort to build a new detention network, which is capable of supporting what the Trump administration has described as the largest deportation campaign in U.S. history. Now, to get a sense of the larger strategy, we spoke this week with Nick Miroff. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic, and he's been writing about this lately. Where did this warehouse idea come from? You say in your reporting it wasn't Stephen Miller's idea. At least it wasn't his preference. So where does it come from, the idea?
Yeah, so it's a great question. Early on in the administration, I think when they were in their, you know, big ideas phase of imagining how they were going to carry out the president's very ambitious mass deportation goals, the question was sort of facing them was, how do you expand the ICE detention system to get to a capacity of 100,000 beds? And keep in mind, that's like far more capacity than the immigration detention system has ever had.
Yeah.
And I use the term beds because that's the way ICE measures its capacity to hold people in custody while it's trying to deport them.
Yeah.
And just to kind of set a baseline, when Trump came into office last year in January, there were about 39,000 people in the ICE detention system. And, you know, at one point after Minneapolis last month, it got up to about 70,000.
Wow.
So they have nearly doubled the number of people they have in custody. But one of the things that they've been warning for a long time is that they can't really get up to the sort of numbers that they want to, over 100,000, that, you know, that the borders are. Tom Homan has said, and, you know, they can't really do that with their existing model.
Yeah.
And so the model that they've relied on for a long time involves, you know, having a few detention centers, but also renting bed spaces from county jails and this kind of loose network across the country where they pay, you know, nightly rates for the ability to hold immigrants in custody. And so this administration started off thinking, like, if we wanted to reimagine the whole system, how would we do it? And they came up with this plan to build, you know, what, you know, we're calling like mega jails, right? Yeah. Where they will get some warehouse properties, they will convert them into immigration detention centers, and then they will own and fully control these large sites. And they believed that was going to be, you know, that was their path to get to the president's goal of a million deportations a year.
Stephen Miller, you mentioned, had advocated for these temporary detention sites, military bases, these big tent camps. Are the warehouses different from that? Did they represent a kind of compromise?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So back in, you know, when Trump was running in 2024, Miller gave an interview to the New York Times in which he kind of mapped out his vision. And he described, you know, a reliance on military bases and, you know, short-term tent facilities really located along the southern border. And Miller's preference was to have something that would be, you know, kind of easier to put up quickly and to take down if it was no longer needed.
Yeah.
But really, they turned to ICE and they said, look, you know, you come up with a plan to do this. You know, what would be your preference? And the, you know, the kind of the detention experts at ICE, so to speak, favored, you know, this more ambitious plan to actually own and control these larger properties. Hmm. And, you know, I think that this was only, it's worth pointing out that this is only made possible because the one big, beautiful bill. Yeah.
They're flush with money.
Exactly. Yeah. The president signed last July, provided them with this incredible amount of money that they, you know, need to go out and spend. And so that bill had basically $45 billion to overhaul the immigration detention system. And, you know, keep in mind that the entire annual operating budget for enforcement and, you know, detention operations at ICE is like $5 billion. So this is nine times their annual budget is suddenly available for this huge makeover of the detention system. And they came up with this plan to go and buy these warehouses and convert them and have, you know, really just remake the entire immigration detention system.
Yeah, they've got plenty of money so they can go into these big facilities that were built not for humans, but for, you know, equipment and whatever. You rework it, that's expensive, but they can afford it. And we'll get to the prices that they're paying, which I think is a sort of another thing I want to talk about. But so they get this, great bureaucratic name, Detention Reengineering Initiative. What's the larger scheme here? How many beds? What's the sort of larger idea here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was a very important moment in all this, which was back in April of last year when they had like an industry expo in Phoenix at which the acting director of ICE, Todd Lyons, told the audience, and the audience is mostly sort of, you know, Homeland Security contractors. He said that they wanted to be, you know, they were asking, what's your vision? And he said, we need to become, you know, more efficient. We need to operate like an e-commerce retail outlet. And so he said, like, we'll be like Prime, but with human beings.
He literally said that, by the way. Let's underline
he literally
that
said
point.
That. Yeah. Yeah. And so that comment, you know, caused a big uproar. And I think at the time, you know, the details of this reengineering institute were not widely known. And now it all makes sense. They really do view the e-commerce model, you know, the logistics of it as, you know, their guide for this. And so, you know, they've gone out and they've literally acquired these large warehouse sites that were designed and were built with kind of, you know, e-commerce in mind as places to store goods and to be strategically located near transportation, you know, networks and, you know, to have these like large footprints. And so they're buying these sites and they want to convert them into immigration detention centers with capacity for, at the larger sites, for up to 10,000 people.
Yeah.
That is so much bigger than any existing ICE detention center that the agency has now. I mean, the biggest ones, you know, have 2,500 people. I mean, that it's really hard to operate an immigration detention center at that scale for even that many people, and to do it, you know, for 10,000 people is really just astounding. And it's going to require a lot of work and a lot of money and additional investment. And you know, now that they've gone out and bought these properties, now the real trouble starts, so to speak.
The federal government purchased the warehouse in Salt Lake for $145.4 million. Salt Lake County assessed it at $97 million. So the DHS paid more than almost 50% of the value of that property. What do you understand about that? Because it seems like they're overpaying everywhere.
Yeah, I've looked at what they paid at a number of these sites, and so have, you know, there was a really fascinating piece by CoStar, which is a commercial real estate, you know, industry publication, and they analyzed the rates that they paid. And some of them were closer to market rates, but as you say, a few of them were well over market rates, including, you know, at least 30%. The assessment that you quoted for Salt Lake City, I had not seen that, but that would suggest that the Salt Lake City was the most over the, you know, market rate that they had, that they have paid anywhere. And I can say that, you know, as the reporting on this has come out over the last few weeks, I think there's been more and more scrutiny, and a number of lawmakers, mostly Democrats, are asking for more details, and they are demanding that the Department of Homeland Security, you know, provide more information about, you know, how it reached those prices, how it came up with those payments and the assessments. When I asked both confidential sources within the Department of Homeland Security and, you know, asked the Department of Homeland Security, they said that no, that ICE, you know, followed the existing procedures for both, you know, the federal acquisition of properties and the way they are assessed. They acknowledged that in some cases they wanted to, you know, because they were on a condensed timeline, they were trying to go fast. They were under pressure from then Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem and her CHOP advisor, Corey Lewandowski, who was really kind of running this whole thing. So they were under this pressure to move fast. They knew that there was going to be some potential resistance in some places, so they were willing to pay a little over, you know, or over market rates. But they said that, you know, that they didn't go outside the standard procedures for assessing and purchasing these properties. But I think all of that is going to come under new scrutiny over the next weeks and months.
If there's also this question, at least in the Utah warehouse purchase, about this kind of Byzantine process of the way it happened here anyway, where you have this, you know, Delaware registered company that's part of this trust purchasing secretly these, like, not a lot of transparency. It seems like a complicated kind of purchase. It doesn't seem illegal, but it just seems complex. Do you have anything to say about the way these things are being purchased?
Yeah, I mean, the way they've gone about it has fueled the suspicion that there was something improper here.
Yeah.
And it's, at the same time, it's hard for me to imagine that they would get into some sort of corrupt scheme knowing the scrutiny that would be on these purchases.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is, again, something that I think is going to come under greater scrutiny in the coming weeks and months. But I think the more broadly, the way they have gone about it is actually going to end up undermining their broader plan, because doing it in this kind of surreptitious way, which I think, you know, they were thinking would help them, you know, diffuse a potential backlash. Well, I think it's actually, you know, enhanced the pushback that they are getting in so many of these jurisdictions, because they moved way too fast. They didn't do any of the kind of, you know, public messaging or preparation to get local communities on board. And so now that these purchases have gone through, people are alarmed and are suspicious as to what the federal government's true intentions are, and they still need the approval of local county, you know, boards and supervisors and city councils to get the permits that they need to convert these sites into detention centers. And so they're facing this political debacle in which they've got all of these, you know, these local lawmakers aligned, you know, against them who they're going to depend on for the permits they need to complete the job.
Well, here in Utah, I mean, this is a red state. Governor Spencer Cox is mostly a Donald Trump supporter, but the DHS didn't let the governor know they were buying the warehouse. They didn't tell any of the members of the congressional delegation, including right. Senator Mike Lee. They didn't tell anyone locally. And I wonder, you mentioned in one of your pieces that one DHS official told you that they're trying to figure out a way to better inform the public and the community and the governor's offices and local officials. Is that in a response to the sort of backlash that they're getting from some of these officials who are saying, why didn't you at least say something to us?
Yeah, I mean, they went about this in such a clumsy way in that, you know, they decide, you know, heading into the fall, and this is what happened according to the sources I spoke with. You know, they had this plan had been sitting around for most of last summer,
right.
waiting for approval. And then as they were very focused on this big recruitment push to hire more than 10,000 new deportation officers for ICE and more than double the size of the ICE workforce. I mean, maybe your listeners will kind of remember, you know, the job expos that right. ICE was holding last fall.
Yeah.
So there was all this attention on their hiring and recruitment push. Well, around that time, someone in the White House went to ICE and said, what's the status of our, you know, detention capacity? Once we have all these officers unleashed on the streets next year, we're going to need more beds to, you know, to put people in. What's the status of your plan? And they're like, this plan is just sitting there, you know, awaiting approval at the Department of Homeland Security.
Wow.
Well, so then the Department of Homeland Security tells ICE, you have to go out and go buy these properties as quickly as possible. And so they set ICE on this frantic, you know, acquisition spree in which they went out and got all these properties and didn't do any of the kind of groundwork that you would expect in anticipation of something this ambitious. I mean, if you told the states that the federal government is going to launch this, you know, huge property buying, you know, binge around the United States with shadowy intentions and the prospect of setting up mass detention sites in people's communities, you'd think that was the kind of thing that they would want to discuss, at least with their allies.
Yeah.
But the federal government really left everyone in the dark. And then so once the plan, you know, started to become clear, that's why you got such a backlash. And frankly, you know, they were taken aback. They expected Republican-led jurisdictions and, you know, red states to be more supportive, to be on board with their plans, and they thought they would support, you know, the president's broader agenda, and that, you know, so they were caught off guard, and that's one of the reasons why this whole effort is now, you know, going to slow down and probably, you know, go on ice for a little while.
You mentioned how the president has talked about wanting a new approach. He sends Tom Holman to Minneapolis. He, of course, ousts Kristi Noem, replaces him with Mullen. What is the new approach as far as you understand it?
Well, I was hearing from sources at the Department of Homeland Security and ICE, even you know, before Noem and Lewandowski left, that this thing was going off the rails. That they, you know, they were seeing the backlash to their plans. They were aware that they were going to need, you know, buy-in from local jurisdictions. It just seemed like that things were going too fast, had gotten off on a bad footing. I think there was an awareness, you know, as Noem, you know, was on her way out, that the new team was coming in with Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen, and that, you know, it was going to be up to him to kind of take ownership of this plan and then have to go out and sell it, so to speak, and do the kind of groundwork that hadn't been done by the Noem regime. And everyone is expecting that it's gonna slow down and take time. And sure enough, you know, one of the first moves that Secretary Mullen did when he got in last week was to put the plan kind of on pause as they prepare. And now they're just sort of working on a plan to approach these jurisdictions to try to, you know, build support and explain what their broader, you know, intentions are, how it's going to work, you know, logistically, and to answer so many of the, you know, the questions that have arisen because of their kind of the sneaky way in which they've done it so far. And I don't know what that new timeline is going to look like. But, you know, you asked about the change in tone, and what we've seen so far, you know, from Mullen, and even during his confirmation hearing, was just, you know, a completely different messaging strategy. And you know, if Kristi Noem's approach was to be flashy and, you know, attention-getting and spend, you know, huge amounts of money on advertisements and, you know, dressing up in all these uniforms and costumes and going on social media to try to, you know, wage the kind of culture war stuff over immigration, I think what, you know, what we've seen since Tom Homan took control of Minneapolis, and really, let's be honest, like when the president put Tom Homan in charge of Minneapolis, it was a turning point in this broad, in the politics of the way that they are talking about their mass deportation campaign. It was a change in favor of a more conventional institutional approach to ICE enforcement, which Tom Homan, a 40-year, you know, veteran of various, you know, law enforcement and immigration enforcement agencies. You know, Tom Homan represents that kind of, you know, institutional way of doing things. And it's not about being flashy on social media. It's certainly not about unleashing a Border Patrol chief like Greg Bovino on the streets of, you know, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Minneapolis to go, you know, battle it out with protesters. This is, it's a view that you, you know, once you've got the resources from the One Big Beautiful Bill, you can actually be more effective by just kind of lowering your profile, turning down the temperature, and quietly going about the work of mass deportations without all the kind of spectacle that Noem and her people represented.
Final question. There is I think the question's coming up in a lot of these communities about whether or not this just signals that more ICE crackdowns are coming. You mention in your reporting how the Trump administration has won a few legal victories from these appellate courts that have, you know, backed these measures to keep immigrants in ICE detention. So I'm wondering, what are you expecting in the way of, is this a precursor? Is this an indicator that, you know, these, that more crackdowns are coming to more cities in the, around the country?
It's a great question. I don't think that we are going to see a return of the, you know, the rolling Greg Bovino style campaign in which they're heading out onto the streets to, you know, to sweep people up and battle it out with protesters. I think, you know, we are moving into a kind of year two approach in which the president's, you know, deportation campaign has generated a fair amount of pushback. They're trying to change the tone and the optics of it. They don't want it to be as in your face, but they think, you know, Stephen Miller, the architect of this campaign and the president's top advisor on this stuff, you know, he's still there, and he is very much thinking about, you know, the numerical objectives that, you know, that he has promised, that the president has promised, and that they still plan to hit. And, you know, they have the money for this stuff. This stuff, the One Big Beautiful Bill, is the law, and the law is that we are going to spend all this money and build this big machinery of you know, immigration enforcement. And they're still going to do that stuff. And I think, you know, what's changed a little bit is the timeline. You know, we're not seeing them trying to impose this like 3,000 arrests per day quota that they were doing last year. They're less focused on, you know, right now on like the overall numbers, and they're more focused on trying to just expand the system and minimize the pushback. But I think that they still very much plan to get to 1 million deportations a year, as the president, you know, and the White House has set as a goal. And, you know, even if there's a little pause, I think that we will see this broader effort resume, even if it looks a little different, if it sounds a little different, because the money is going to drive it.
Nick Miroff, thanks very much.
Thank you. Anytime.
Nick Miroff. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic. He covers immigration, the Department of Homeland Security, and the U.S.-Mexico border. We'll put a link to his work on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're on YouTube at KUER 90.1 and Instagram at Radio West. And we're still looking for questions for our conversation with the sustainable landscaping expert Daryl Lindsay. If you're just getting your yard or your garden underway, you probably have some questions, so you can email them to us at radiowest@kuer.org. Aidan Oneida is our intern. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. I'm Doug Fabrizio.